call to order the February 8th, 2022 regular business meeting of Simpsonville City Council. City Clerk Long, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Gooch?
Here.
Councilmember Root?
Here.
Councilmember Houlihan?
Here.
Councilmember Rochay?
Here.
Councilmember Cummings?
Here.
Councilmember Hutchings?
Here.
Mayor Schumaker?
Here. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first item under our presentation section of the agenda is by Cindy Tench, who is from the Simpsonville Arts Foundation. Ms. Tench, if you would come forward and talk about the sculpture at the Arts Center, please.
Hi, my name is Cindy. I've met most of you. I'm the current chairperson for the Simpsonville Arts Foundation, and we were founded decades ago with the sole purpose of ensuring that we have an arts center in Simpsonville. So we have a long-standing history of helping the building in different projects. We've had special interior maintenance projects along with creating the outdoor amphitheater and also commissioning a sculpture entitled Brace for the purpose of the outside of the arts center for all of the community to enjoy. So that sculpture, like the building, needed some attention over time. And we're just so thrilled to see both of them come to life in my tenure here. So the Simpsonville Arts Foundation would like to formally present this sculpture to the city of Simpsonville to be permanently on loan as long as there's an arts center. In the event that there is no more arts center, we would ask that it come back to us, hopefully to put somewhere else in the community, or if we have our own brick and mortar. Really happy to be part, and I'm teary-eyed because we have come so far with the city. We've partnered, we've done such great things, and we're looking forward to so many more, so many more great things with the city. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Tench. And does anybody have any questions for her? I just want to point out that a week from tonight, we are having a dedication of the renovation of the Arts Center, and about 15 minutes before that at 6:45, we will be outside to rededicate the installation of the sculpture in front of the Arts Center. And so I look forward to seeing all of you there, and of course we invite the public to attend as well, because we're very proud of what's going on there.
We are, and we've seen it come from, you know, an old dilapidated building, and y'all have worked so hard, and we have over the course of time too, and it's like baby, you know, it's like it's one of our children, and we're so excited to see this happen. So thank you, and to your brother for a fabulous job on that sculpture, and we just love it. I know the community will as well.
Thank you, Cindy. Right. Really Thank appreciate you. That. Thank you. Next is a report from the Greenville County Rehabilitation Authority on the 2022 Annual Action Plan. Iman Woburu, if you would please come to the podium and make your report.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Iman Woburu. I'm the Program Director for Greenville County Rehabilitation Authority. I also have a new member, board member, Mr. Adam White, who is here to support me and to make sure I'm doing it right, too. So thank you for the opportunity of presenting the 2020 Annual Action Plan and to talk about the funds that will be coming from the federal government to Greenville County. Hopefully that's going to continue to be that way. And how are we going to spend the funds for this year? The funds that come from the U.S. Department of Urban Development in Greenville County really are three funding sources: the Community Development Block Grant, the Home Investment Partnership and Emergency Solutions Grant. But for the purpose of this meeting, it's going to be solely on Community Development Block Grants, our project NCDPG, and Home because the emergency solutions grant is countywide, so it's not specific to City of Simpsonville, it's basically everywhere. And these funds are used to address basically low and moderate income. That's the main thing. It's whatever you're going to do, it's like, does it address low and moderate income? Benefits, community. One of the things, fortunately and unfortunately for City of Simpsonville, that means that depending on how you look at it, you don't have a qualifying census tract. However, there are ways to address low and moderate income needs in the community. And we'll talk about some other things. The CDBG fund can be used for urgent need, economic development, housing, facility improvement, infrastructure improvement. But like I said, it always goes back to that. The home fund is used to basically address production supply of affordable housing to low and moderate income families. And that means going down to the 80% and below of the area median income. I understand you all got my presentation, so I'm not going page by page, but I provided some resources to tell you how this income are gotten. The total funds for projected for this year, and I also gave you a three-year funding that you see, but the third year, I mean the current 2022 we're talking about, is basically proposed. We don't have the real numbers for City of Simpsonville. However, we're projecting based on the current funding source and added the 2020 census documentation, your total population, poverty rates and everything. So that changed a little bit from 2021. So if the numbers change, that's gonna be different. We'll reallocate and recalculate everything. And if you can see from your 2020 census data, I just gave a little snapshot of that. You had a 5,000 increase in population. Your poverty rate is 5.4, so you're doing very well compared to other places. And however, you still qualify as an Auburn County, as a city that participates in the cooperative agreement, you do get funding from the U.S. Department of Urban Development. That prevents you from applying for funds from the state. So we do the normal allocation of funds. And I also showed you different ways we're going to allocate the funds. So going into the 2022, the fiscal year 2022 starts July 1 of this year and ends June 30th of 2023. Right now we're currently in 2021. So right now I'm just bubbling numbers to know that. And it's also going to be the third year of the five-year plan that we did. In 2020, we did a five-year comp plan. And each year we're going to do an annual action plan that will meet what we said we were going to do. And basically we had different five goals, housing goals, we had economic development goals, we had community development goals, we had homelessness goals, and we also had goals to revitalize neighborhoods. So some of all those are there. And specifically to your fund and allocation proposed, the CDBG funding is $173,779. The program income, and I explained a little bit of what the program income is. Basically, all the funds, if we invest your CDBG funds, it could have been a rehab loan provided to somebody, it could have been rental that we did. Any proceeds from those come back to your city as program income. So if we sell a property, sell, like we have clients for Woodside, the funds that we use to build the three that we'll be building will come back to you as program income. So as you saw those, we have the projected sales price of $195,000 to $200,000, and because of the interest rate, they are able to be sold to low mod, 80% and below. And when you check what they'll be paying, it'll be less than the fair market value that I showed you guys on that table. So that makes those units affordable. The home grant allocation, proposed allocation is $67,319, and your program income of home program income is $9,600. We kind of divided out that majority of the fund is going to go back into helping to do the facility improvements you have for your senior Center. The senior center is being built and you all approved. You are aware we have laser construction companies selected as a contractor, so they're getting ready. We're going to be meeting with them this week to, you know, show that they, you know, they are ready to do that. I'm sure from that plan that I showed you, and probably you've seen some of the plans, it is going to be a beautiful center. Have opportunity for in and out events. The seniors will basically probably be there all the time. And I'm sure you get a lot of invite from other people trying to use that. The idea and the skill, we're very proud of the design the architect provided to us, and city administrator has been, she's really, really part of making sure we got this done the right way. So we'll make, you know, and she also got the additional PEEP grant to help support the funding. So the funds for that is completely in place between the PEEP grant and the CDBG funds. And we also set aside some funds for facade improvements, economic development, and things like that. And we put rental reserve, because we do have a rental property that we use to maintain, make sure the house is still in order and all that. So, you know, so basically that's kind of in a nutshell what all those things are going to be done, going to be used for. You still have money that, of course, besides the $100,000 you have for facility improvement, like I said, you have money that you carry forward that's going to help to do all this. We have funding for the Woodside projects that Habitat will be using to build. We gave them their shoulder funding, and $300,000 was approved before. We also have the funds that GCR will be using to build the three houses. So everything is in place and going on, and I showed you pictures of the progress that's going on. And I believe they're actually ready to close on one of the units, so that's exciting too. I just want to kind of put a little notice to what I call out of reach affordability, because people forget what that means. It basically, and I give an instance that somebody that is paid $10 an hour, it can across $20,800, can really only afford a house that is $520. We all know what's going on right now. Even looking at the fair market rate for 2021 that HUD has provided us, can't even find anything for 520. So that's the reason why we're really pushing affordable housing. Right now we're going through the notice of funding for Home and Greenville County Affordable Housing Fund. You know, reaching out to developers for homeownership or rental, or even using our funds as part of the LIHTC funding to leverage those. So that way they can help folks. LIHTC projects actually increase 60% the max annual medium, you know, income. So that makes houses affordable, that folks making $10 can afford an affordable house. You know, so we do forget that. And most of them, most of your workers, police, fire, 37,000, 40,000, they're actually winning your 80% and below. We need to build houses to keep them here so they're not living somewhere else. So that's the goal for pushing affordable housing in the community, homeownership or rental in everywhere in the county. If we do get funding or proposals from, I mean, we do have funding, if we have proposals from developer and the project in the city, Sensenville, we will let you know and share the information. One of the things we talked about with the city administrator in our meeting is, since you don't have a qualifying census tract, and we do know some communities, you know, if you do the look the area, you know they need funds for rehab. We want to really aggressively market rehab program. So that way, number one, it helps people to age in place. And it also helps others with the COVID be able to fix their houses. So in that kind of way, we're going to change a little bit of things to make it those that are unoccupied that we give up to $25,000. You know, reduce the interest rate is really 1%. But find ways to make it possible that they can use it. The home repair program are really up to $10,000 for seniors or persons living with disability. You don't have to pay that. That's forgivable grant. So we want to make sure people are able to age in place. We want to make sure we provide the houses and we want to make sure we preserve the existing stuff that we have in the community while also building more to accommodate folks that are coming into the community as well. There, we want to push the facade. You've done a lot of, we've got a lot of facade projects and economic flow in the past year. It'd be wonderful. I showed some of those pictures there. The facade improvement program really gives $5,000 for business owners as long as they're in your downtown central business district. It's a 5-year forgivable loan. They don't have to pay that. The business loan is $25,000, it's 5%. We really defer the first year because our goal is to make sure you're successful and sustainable in the business. So that way we work with you. Sometimes we give it a 1-year deferment and you still need help to get that done. We'll extend that. We're not a bank. We want to make sure you're there and you're able to employ or retain your one moderate income family. So that's basically in a nutshell. The funds is coming into the city. Ways that we plan to use it, and any other questions that you have.
Questions for Ms. Novotny? Councilmember Gooch.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. The topic of affordable housing has come up, I know, on this council several times and really all over the country. What I'm looking at and seeing, and I'm hoping you can help answer this question, is are we, not just the city of Simpsonville, but maybe Greenville County and other governing bodies, inadvertently pricing people out of the market through zoning? And for example, we don't allow duplexes in the city of Simpsonville, and that might help as an example of some more, make housing more affordable. We did away with that many years ago, and I'm seeing a trend towards that, to push towards more single family. So again, are we inadvertently, we want to do this, but our zoning really doesn't allow us to get there.
I'm glad you asked, because that's, yeah, I have to answer it personally. GCRA, we really push on attached single family housing. That's our niche in doing rental. We don't do the multi ourselves. We fund others. But when we go into a community, having the ability to do the attached housing and making it in a way that you can actually allow that zero lot line, that helps us sell. In communities where they don't allow the zero lot line, we're keeping the houses as rental. But you're right, because land costs in the city as a whole is really expensive. And when that's factored into your cost of development, you don't have enough old subsidies to do that. So I really think that that's one of the policies, even when we did the analysis of impediment, that's one of the impediments we identified, that ways to help land become more affordable, ways to increase the density. I think we're not in the, things have changed, so we no longer in the, we've got to have the 15,000 square foot space. And again, there's a market for it. The duplex townhome, duplex houses were built in the city of Moulton. It was completely rented out even before we finished. We're building another 33 units, this time homeownership units. It's kind of a nice infill, missing middle concept for the sites that we chose in Moulton. They're going to be 33 units. They're going to be single family. They're going to be homeownership units. Each unit is going to be half a garage, 3-bedroom, 2 baths, close to 1,500 square feet. So even before we started, we're trying to do infrastructure. People have been calling us. The neighborhood was very supportive of that. So people are supportive of those. I know that people always wonder the density, sometimes how much is too much, so that is something. But making sure you have adequate suitable, people are able to have proper amenities within themselves to be there. We made sure we had enough parking so people not gonna park on the street. We made sure we're gonna have lamp posts. We made sure they're gonna have a little play area. So things like that is just what type of development, how is the quality of life of the people you're planning for? And then the cost, it does help, cost of development.
Thank you.
I'm going to go a little bit out of order here because I wanna kind of, you know, add to what Councilmember Gooch has brought up. As I just attended last month, the Upstate Housing Market forecast luncheon, and what they were talking about seeing in housing demand is that right now the demand for single-family residential, that, you know, 3,000 square feet and two-car garage and a big yard with a family and all that kind of thing, that demand is going way down. What they're seeing is the baby boomers are getting to the point where they're wanting to downsize, and that is not available. And meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum, that middle that is the family thing is much, much less. The other end of the spectrum is millennials who either single or a couple who don't have children, and they're looking for a smaller space that they can buy. And that's, they're seeing that demand in the market for, that kind of goes the opposite of what, how we're zoned, right? So I think it's a great point. So, Councilmember Roche?
Just out of curiosity, you mentioned the 1,500 square feet, multi-level housing in Malden. How much will those rent for those individual units?
We have 50%. We kind of spread the rent, so it's not one, so it's a mixed income. We made sure you were able to have people from 50% AMI to 120 AMI. So, but there were more 80% and below. So they came from about 700 per month to 11 for 1,400. And the market rate for Malden rental is really much higher than those. So the ones that are 11 were income that are above the 80% AMI. So it's not, we had about 13 or 14, 80% and below. And then the remainder were 81 to 120 AMI. Yes, coming to the rent price is about 700 to 1,100 per month.
Thank you.
Councilmember Houlihan.
Thank you. You said something in the presentation about with the home repair grants and aggressively marketing those rehab programs. Can you talk a little bit more about how you do that?
It's gonna be different because right now with COVID, nobody wants you to knock on your door and all things like that. I will probably also use some of your website. We'll probably do some door hangers. And sometimes we've got neighborhoods that we will mail out if they want to have a neighborhood meeting. We're very successful. That was prior COVID to Woodside, but we hope that the Westwood area and others can take advantage of it. We're going to send those little door hangers in that will help. We'll probably mail some brochures out as well, but we'll give them where to contact us, and that's, you know, we'll walk through that process with them.
I think that that's really very important. I know in my ward, I've talked to a number of people who would really benefit from that program and who have asked questions about why doesn't something like this exist? Why is everything about new construction? We have neighborhoods like Woodside and like Westwood where people bought homes 30, 40 years ago.
Yes, right.
They're still aging in place, or they're multi-generational families living there. They're passing the homes on, but the homes need work. And there are situations where we've seen people being kicked out of their homes, losing their homes because they can't keep up with the maintenance because they're so far behind on that maintenance. And something like the home repair grants would really help them to be able to get caught up. And I think that that's really important to make sure we get that information to the right people. And if you need to know neighborhoods, I know them because I've spoken to these people who really, really are interested in this sort of thing. I would really like to be able to get that information directly to them so that they know what those options are and can begin to hopefully benefit from that in some way. You know, the Greenville News reported today that 16,000 people in Greenville County were evicted from their homes. And I saw people in Westwood who were evicted from their homes in the last month. it's a dire situation, something that just illustrates the need for a focus on affordable housing options. And I just want to make sure that we do really push that home repair piece of it too, because it is often talk about new construction or, you know, adding multifamily units and that sort of thing. But we do have a stock of homes who are here with people who live in them, love them, would like to stay and not be priced out, to Mr. Gooch's point, out of their own homes, their homes that they've had their entire lives. So I just think that's really important, and being aggressive about that marketing really speaks to me, and I would like to make sure we do it. Thank you.
And just to add to what you just mentioned about the eviction, we still have COVID dollars. If they don't contact us, what we say, call, go through United Way. We have an arrangement with them that people that call in, or they will basically send you to the different agents who have multiple agencies that are working. One of them, they want to be a service recipient, Center for Community Services. They will take information and help them with rent assistance. We have another they can send for mortgage assistance as well. So we have for food and utility payments. So they just need to reach out.
Councilor Hutchings.
Westwood is in my ward as well. And you mentioned neighborhood meetings were pre-COVID possibility. Do you foresee when that might be available to us to do in the Westwood neighborhood at some point?
We could plan it as quickly as, you know, because if they don't want to come in person, you know, being afraid, we can have a Zoom. Some of the neighborhoods have been doing Zoom, so that's another thing that we'll reach out to start that process.
I'd be very much interested in following up on that.
Any other comments or questions? All right, thank you, Ms. Nwabadu. We appreciate everything that you and the Greenville County Redevelopment Authority does, and the fact that you come back year after year to make this report.
I love coming here.
Thank you. Next is the 2021 audit presentation by David Phillips of Green Finney Colley, LLP. Mr. Phillips.
All right, this is your favorite presentation of the year, I know. If you're a number person, you might like it. If you're not, you just want these things to go quick. But hopefully you have received from management a copy of the report, probably electronically. They have hard copies, and they will, I think they've probably been distributed to you good this evening. But you know, what we have done in the past is just try to hit the highlights. The old days, we would try to go through the report, and then we'd get a glaze on everybody's eyes, and you know, we just try to speed it up and get done with it. But going to the PowerPoint, we try to just hit the real highlights of what took place. But remember, we're talking about June 30th of 2021. I know a lot of you are in 22, and you're already thinking about even maybe the 23 budget. I know Diana is. So again, I know some of this is a little bit old. Your staff really worked with us this year. We had a lot of turnover. And we asked them if we could push it back a little bit so that we could get the audit done a little later, and they worked with us. And we're going to move you back up, Lord willing, this coming year as we get the staffing situation in a better place. So let's look through this PowerPoint. We like to remind everybody of the importance of internal controls. And that's not just important for the city, it's for really any entity, that there's checks and balances so that one person can't do it all. And so one of the things that we do as your auditors is we try to look at your significant internal control processes, and we try to make sure that there are good checks and balances. And if we come across issues, it's not only important that I talk to Christine and Diana about it, it's important that you know about it. Because how can you fix something if you don't know it's broken? So again, we try to remind you about that, and that these are your financial statements. And so when we come to the next slide, our responsibility is to issue an opinion. Now remember, we're not looking for pennies. We look at materiality, which is around 1-2%. And we try to look at it from that standpoint. I know some of you, you make sure your bank rec is balanced to the penny. There's some of you, close, I'm $100, I'm good, and I just move on. But, you know, again, we're looking at things from that materiality perspective. You have what is considered, you know, the best opinion you can get, which is an unmodified opinion. And what that means is everything looks good. We're not aware of why we would need to modify our opinion. So again, if we modified our report, we would say everything looks good except for this area. Well, you really don't really want one of those. We did implement a new accounting standard on fiduciary activities, and the firefighters' 1% monies now show up in your financial statements. It's a requirement by the GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, but those monies are restricted. You can't use them for any purpose that you want to. They have to be used for firefighters' betterment and so forth, but they're required now to be shown in your financial statements. All right, well, let's look at the fund that I know you really focus on in most governments. It's your general fund, and we show you kind of how your fund balance has changed over time. That's a good chart. It's a lot better when it's going up than down, of course. And so your fund balance increased 1.6 million. And there's some various categories of fund balance, but the biggest category, of course, is this unassigned category. Unassigned meaning it's available for you to assign for something. And so you have 17.7 million. Last year, it was 15.1. And that is about 89% of your 2021 actual expenditures and about 87% of your budgeted expenditures for the year that we're in right now. The GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association, they recommend a minimum of 2 months. And your own fund balance policy wants you to at least keep 25. Now, I know you can see it's a good trend there, but remember, you've got a lot of projects coming. And you've issued some debt. And I know, Diana, you know, costs are going up with construction. And so I know there's a lot of plans that you may have to use some of these resources for some of the projects that you're looking at over the next few years. All right, so why do you want to have a good fund balance? Well, you know, some of your revenues only come in at certain times of the year. It helps you with emergencies. I think this health pandemic, governments that didn't have a lot of fund balance, they really struggled. You know, when revenues drop and you've got to be able to pay bills, you want to be able to have some contingency money, some money on the side there. It gives you better interest rates when you issue debt. It helps you for planned capital expenditures. Well, you have a lot of planned capital expenditures. It's just important in uncertain economic times. All right, well, let's look at your general fund revenues. They were $21 million. The bulk of that is in taxes of $15.9 million, $3.3 million in licenses, permits, and fees, and then you can see those other sources. You really had a strong increase, $2 million. Over the prior year. Tax revenues, you know, you did raise your millage, but the assessed values keep growing. You're just seeing a lot of growth. And then even your licenses, permits, and fees, people are eating out. They're still shopping, and those revenues grew as well. As it relates to your budget, you came in over budget by $1.6 million, or 8%. Again, tax revenues, the growth revenues of business licenses and permits and fees and so forth, and then other revenues. Now, part of that too, with it there being a health pandemic, your staff is going to be kind of conservative. We don't know whether we get a new variant, we go back the other direction. So when they budgeted, they tried to be very careful with what they were doing there. All right, your general fund expenditures were $19.8 million. We kind of list the functions there, but public safety is generally around 45 to 55%. You can see you're kind of in that neighborhood with most municipalities there. Your expenditures were up $1.3 million. The bulk of that in public safety. But remember, if your expenditures are up and if it's not capital related, generally it's salaries and benefits, right? And remember, you had a 3% COLA / merit salary increase. You had some bonuses. You also remember fire station new positions there. That drove the increase in expenditures. As it relates to your budget, though, you came in under budget. So what's good on your revenue side? You came in over budget. That's a great thing. On expenditures, you came in under. That's a really good thing. When both of those happen, you really are able to add money to your fund balance. And that's kind of what took place this past year. All right, well, let's look at some of your other funds. I know some of these don't get the glamour as much as the general fund, but you have this accommodation and hospitality tax fund, has approximately $18.5 million in fund balance. It grew a lot, but the biggest piece there is that you issued some bonds, remember, this year. You have $14.1 million in unspent bond proceeds, and you got a lot of projects that are kicking off. Your revenues were $2.7 million. You had expenditures of 1.6, and then we mentioned the bond proceeds coming in. Remember, you did pay off an older bond, and then the rest of that money is sitting there ready for these projects. And then you had a little bit of transfers out to reimburse on some of the art center work as well. Remember, you set up this Simpsonville Municipal Facility Corp this year. It's a blended component unit, but because it's so big, remember, you issue debt there, it literally will show up in your financial statements as a separate column, in the major column. Because there's so much money, the GASB says, hey, we got to make it very visible, and you need to be able to see what's coming in and out of it. So it's being tracked separately by management, and it will continue to be reporting the financials as such until it winds down and the money is spent. But remember on that, we issued some more bonds. Remember, you had bonds and premium of about $13.2 million and just a little bit of expenditures, and that was bond issuance costs. So that money is sitting there ready for its intended purpose as well. All right, well, let's briefly look at your sewer fund. Had approximately $15.6 million in net position at year end, of which $4.5 million is unrestricted. We kind of list the revenue and expenses, and that you receive some donated infrastructure. So a lot of times you're getting sewer infrastructure as developments are completed, your engineers inspect it, and then it's accepted by the city and it's your asset going forward. That's what the donated infrastructure is. Remember, a couple years ago you set up the Public Works Fund, and you have approximately $2.6 million in fund balance there. And you know, we show you the revenues and so forth, but remember, that's to help fund sanitation, road improvements, and so forth. And so that money is just not for any purpose. It has very designed purposes for what it can be used for. All right, wanted to mention a little bit about your pension. Remember, you participate in the state plans. Unfortunately, the state plans aren't doing so well. And your liability, which is your proportionate share of the liability, increased about $2.1 million. Now, remember, that's not something they're going to ask you to write them a check tomorrow for $17.6 million. But what they do get you on is the second to the last bullet point, they're raising rates. And those rates are going to get up to 18.56 and 21.24. But remember, that's just your employer side. Your employees are paying over 9% too. There's 30 some cents almost going into this pension plan of every dollar to try to shore up the state pension plan. And if it does start getting better and that liability on the state level goes down, then your proportionate piece of it will go down as well. That's the hope. All right, I wanted to look briefly at your capital assets. You have $62.6 million. They increased $1.7 million. You had about $5.5 million of additions. We kind of list some of those. Remember, this year in the equipment vehicle section, you got a new fire truck, remember that? A whole bunch of sanitation trucks and other vehicles. But when we capitalize something, we begin to depreciate it over its estimated useful life. And that's the depreciation expense of $3.5 million there. All right, well, let's look at your long-term obligation. You had a lot of activity. You had those two new issuances, and so that's why you had an increase of $25.8 million. You made some of your normal regularly scheduled payments, but remember, you issued $30 million in installment purchase revenue bonds and hospitality accommodation tax revenue refunding improvement bonds. Say that about five times real quick. See how easy that is. So you have all those monies that have come in ready for these projects. You do still have a legal debt limit of about it's a total of 8.5. You have about 700,000 in general obligation bonds outstanding, but it leaves you a margin of 7.8 if you wanted to issue general obligation debt. Your debt service payments for the year we're in right now is about $2.7 million. So remember, when you issue debt, just like on your own mortgage, when you get it on your house, you got to make your annual mortgage payment. That's what the 2.7 represents. All right, wanted to mention to you, we don't really see any significant changes in auditing standards right now. There are some in the works. There's a new accounting standard change for leases. And what that will be is if you ever entered into a long-term lease, let's say you wanted to rent a building for 10 years at $100,000, they want you to treat that as a liability and an asset now. It used to be you didn't have to show that. You just showed that you made a rent payment whenever you made it. They want it on your balance sheet. They want people to be able to see, ooh, I got this $1 million 10 times 100,000, but also I have this asset, a right to use this building, and I'm going to depreciate that, and I got to make my payments against the liability. They want everybody to see it going forward. All right, good thing is we did not have to do a single audit this year, but remember, you got a lot of ARPA funds. And next year, and probably the next year, and probably the next year, you're probably going to have single audits because of spending those federal funds. If you spend more than $750,000, you have to have a special single audit. The management letter was a separate letter you would have received as well. It's kind of like this. It's pretty boilerplate, but if we had issues, let's say Diana was very difficult to deal with, we'd have to write that up in here. Or if there was something that we thought an adjustment should have been made and they weren't willing to book it, we'd have to make you aware of that. There's nothing like that in here, but we do mention how we implemented that new GASB standard about the firefighters' money. So that's all that's really in there. Again, I want to remind you, you've got a good thing. I know it's a strange term, undermodified, that's good. You really have strong financial condition. Staff are great to work with. It's really nice since I'm in Malden. This isn't very far. It's just right down the road. I'll open the floor for any questions that you might have, because I know I kind of go quick on this.
Council? Councilmember Cummings.
Not a question. This is just a comment. I know what we have here in this city is fairly rare. And I know it's oftentimes the normal course of business is seen as just normal course of business. But I just wanted to out loud again thank Christina and Diana and David for your work on this audit. Someone who looks at these types of things all the time, and to understand and know the integrity and the time and the work that it takes to make this happen on a month-to-month basis, generally with a smile every single time, knowing there's a lot of man hours or woman hours doing this. I just wanted to personally say it out loud how much I am, and I know everyone echoes the same thoughts, how pleased we are with where we are in a financial situation. We had the pandemic and everything that happened, and we didn't skip a beat, and we took care of our employees and the whole city. No one skipped a beat. So I just want to say thank you out loud for all of you all for that. And Phyllis, and David, everybody.
Specific. The comments? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Phillips. We appreciate everything that you do and GFC does. And having been here several different days when your auditors were here, I know the look of what auditors look like in a conference room. And so I was certainly aware you guys were doing that. So again, thank you. And well said, Councilmember Cummings.
Thank you.
Each member of council will have received the minutes for the January 11th, 2022 business meeting of Greenville City, Simpsonville City Council. Wow, I would have to resign my office. Each will have received a copy of the minutes. Were there any corrections to the minutes? All right, then the minutes will stand approved as written. We had no one enrolled to participate in citizen comments tonight, so we'll get into our business items. Councilmember Hutchings?
I'd like to recuse myself from the vote on the state accommodation tax funding due to a conflict of interest.
Okay. All right, so that item is 7A, our state accommodations tax funding approval. City Administrator Gracely, would you like to summarize, please?
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. And I apologize that I was not with you all 2 weeks ago to have more informal discussion about this. So I'll just give you an overview of where we are. As you know, these funding requests come before you every year after the advisory committee has met. They do meet, they review, we provide them copies of the applications in advance of their first meeting. We also ask that all of the applicants come in and meet with the committee and present their projects and answer any questions that the committee might have. And then they go home and they consider the request and they come back together and collectively make recommendations to present to council. And so that's what you have before you, the recommendations of the Accommodations Tax Committee. I do want to point out that due to the pandemic, accommodations tax revenues were way down from where they had been in past years. This funding always lags behind. So understand that, yes, things are getting better. And so hopefully next year we'll be back up to our pre-COVID funding levels, or at least closer to it. But they were dealing with a much lower pot of money to distribute to the applicants. We also had a couple of new applicants come in this year that we've not had in previous years. So that affected some of their recommendations as well. So with that, you have the chart before you. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have on specific funding requests.
Thank you, Administrator Gracely. A motion is in order. Councilmember Houlihan.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to move that council approve the state accommodations tax funding as presented.
Second.
I have a motion from Council Member Houlihan with a second from Council Member Roche. Discussion? Council Member Houlihan.
Thank you. I'm going to be voting in favor of the recommendation, and I'd encourage my fellow council members to do the same. I did have an opportunity to look over some of the applications myself, just out of curiosity to see what was in them. You know, we appointed the ATAX committee, according to state law, to make appropriate decisions about how we should potentially spend this money. They used their background knowledge, expertise, years that they have in their fields, in the accommodations industry and in the lodging industry, to help decide which activities were most likely to be beneficial to the accommodations industry and to the city of Simpsonville. And I think that they did a really good job of doing that. In reviewing their recommendations, some of those applications in the state law, it's clear that the things that they chose were tourism related as defined by the state law. And therefore, I think that there is no reason to not approve their recommendations as presented to council.
Other commentary, questions?
Do you have a couple questions?
Councilmember Root.
I think maybe this question is good to Mr. Holmes, perhaps, or Ms. Gracely, maybe as well. I feel obligated to ask certain questions, having just run out of campaign. I talked to a lot of people that had questions, so I'm going to ask some questions, if I may. Specifically, the ones that require the drinking, the downtown, are we at all liable as a city if there were, and I know that perhaps it hasn't happened yet, are we liable as a city if there were an accident because that's a city activity with city tax money? How would that work? Do we buy extra insurance for things like that? Can you elaborate to that?
These are not city events unless the city's actually the sponsor, and the city of Simpsonville Parks and Recreation is one of the applicants. But outside of that, these are all independent, and these are funds allocated to fund those programs. And while they are tax dollars of the city, they're required by state law to be given out to do these funding projects. So no, the city wouldn't have any liability for them.
Okay.
If I may just expand on that as well, we do have a special permit application that all of these organizations are required to complete, and they do have to carry a certain amount of insurance coverage to do these events as well. So that's another layer of protection that, you know, we make sure that they're properly insured for these events in case there is some sort of accident.
Okay. Follow-up question for me. It's good to see a new I know we're doing a new event this year, which is good to see. What, and I think I asked you this before, and just to be clear,
what can we do as a city to promote to get more and more? I saw, you know, I've looked at the applicants, you know, we didn't accept them all. But what can we do to get more response for people to come and apply?
Councilman Houlihan?
I don't think that that's germane to the question on the table, which is whether or not to approve these particular recommendations.
Am I allowed to ask questions about where the ATAX money is going?
I think I'll rule in favor of her point of order that it's not germane to that, but you can ask questions about these things that are on the list, yes. Go ahead, Mr. Root.
Would you like for me to, you mentioned that there's a new applicant. Would you like for me to talk about that particular?
Yeah, just a question.
Because we were very pleased to see that. That's the, I think you're referring to the Everything Outdoor Fest.
Yes.
They actually, the reason that they became aware of the funding source is because they contacted us initially to possibly use Heritage Park as the venue for this event. And then in doing their due diligence, they found a location that they felt was more suitable for the festival. It's on a farm with a body of water and there's more room. The good thing for us is it's only about 4 miles from the city. And so our hotels will benefit as a result, even though the event itself is not in the city. So because they came to us to use our venue, I talked to her about the availability of the funding, even though they weren't doing the event in the city. So, you know, I think the best thing we can do, of course, we do have a lot of organizations that come back to us year after year, because they've proven to be very successful and very beneficial to the community. But there are new ones that come and we try to make them aware of it. The county also has accommodations tax funding, and I actually encouraged her to apply to the county as well because she wasn't funded at the entire request. And so I said, you know, we're not the only resource for that. The county has accommodations tax funding, and even if the event's in the city of Simpsonville, which this one happens to not be, they can apply for that money as well.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions? All right, hearing none. On the motion to approve the state accommodations tax funding approval, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed signify by saying no.
No.
We have 5 ayes and 1 no with 1 recusal. Did you get the names, Juan?
I did.
Thank you. All right, item 7B, the approval of the Welcome Center budget. City Administrator Gracely, will you summarize, please?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I believe Ms. McGarity is in the audience, so if you have specific questions about her budget, I would ask you to invite her up to answer those. I will tell you this is new this year. We've never been required to have the Accommodations Tax Advisory Committee or Council review the budget in advance of the next fiscal year. But TURC, the organization that monitors the state funding, has this requirement now that is new. So we did reach out to the chamber and ask them to prepare a budget for you all to review and approve. This was approved unanimously by the committee. So they are recommending that Council approve it as well.
Thank you. Motion is in order. Councilmember Cummings?
Mayor Shoemaker, I'll make a motion to approve the Welcome Center budget as proposed.
I have a motion from Councilmember Cummings with a second from Councilmember Roche. Discussion? All right. Hearing none, and on the motion to approve the Welcome Center budget, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed signify by saying no. Motion carries unanimously. And with that, without objection, we will stand adjourned.